Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, a candid conversation as we learn about types of dementias, such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, frontal temporal, and Lewy body, and the effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, overcome obstacles, and find positive outcomes. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Hey, hello, listeners. I am really happy today because I have a new friend that I've just actually met recently, but I feel like we're already friends just from the conversations that we've had. And her name is Debbie Job. Hi, Deb.
Hey, how are you doing, Jill?
I hope I said your last name right.
You did. Thank you.
Excellent. Hey, Deb, I met you actually when I was giving a lecture for the support group for a different kind of Alzheimer's called PCA, post-collateral postcortical atrophy, something like that. Am I close?
Posterior cortical atrophy.
That's a mouthful.
It is, right.
And, you know, I have been really, really open with my listeners about my family's issues because I want everybody to understand that when there is something that is agitating our brain, a disease that is affecting our brain, that we, you know, don't look at it as some kind of enigma or some kind of a stigma. We want to be open about it so people understand. When I talked to you, you said, that's how I feel. I want people to understand what I'm going through. So let's just talk a little bit about what your diagnosis is. And thank you so much for being on the call and being really open about everything today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and thank you for having me, Jill. And yes, Jill and I met in a very strange circumstance. I loved her when I listened to her during one of the support group meetings, and it was like, wow, she's dynamic, and there's so much. I've learned a lot just from the resources on your site. So great site, by the way.
Thank you.
So for me,
yeah,
I am probably like many others. I am 54 years old. I was at the height of my career, been in the professional environment for 35 years, mm-hmm. Two grown children, one married, both doing very well, a wonderful husband, life going along like perfect, and then wham. My husband happened to start noticing that I'm a very meticulous person, you know, dot the mm-hmm. I's, cross the T's, organized brain, financial, technical, you know, give me a spreadsheet, a PowerPoint, I'll knock it out of the park. give me a budget. Yeah, give me a budget, and I'll take that budget and run with it.
Mm-hmm.
So he started noticing over about a year and a half time period that I was forgetting things, starting to forget things I never would forget. And then also sometimes my speech, I'm forgetting words not coming out, or in the middle of a sentence and I can't quite come up with that right word,
mm-hmm.
And getting frustrated with it. You know, we're thinking it's stress. Hey, I'm in a very, you know, high profile, very client facing, visible profession with a very large, very complex, very global client. Sure, maybe I'm just stressed.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of chalked it up to there, but it got to the point where literally he would say something I literally did not remember at all. And it just became very pronounced. And he finally said, Deb, something's wrong. Something is not right with you.
Mm-hmm.
So he actually made me go to my primary care physician.
Wow.
I will say for the listeners, the one thing that's super important to have a really good open primary care.
Right.
She took one look at me, and she kind of knows me, and she looked at me and said, you know what? We're going to do a couple things. First, I'm going to send you for an MRI. Let's mm-hmm. see if there's something going on.
Okay.
And then after the MRI, if there isn't, I'm going to send you to this neurology institute, and we're going to do what's called a neuropsychological test on you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I'm not crazy. She's like, no, it kind of maps your mind. It kind of just pretty much where your strong suits and how you think and spatial and all these different executive functions and things.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I said, okay. So the MRI showed some white focal, I can't quite remember it, but it wasn't anything too alarming.
Mm-hmm.
So went to did the neuropsych test, which I thought I aced everything through school. I thought I was I totally went above and beyond. It was horrible, the results.
Oh, no.
And I was like, I was in tears, Jill, because I'm like, I always do well.
Right. Well, those are, I've taken those neurobehavioral exams, and they're hard.
Right? They're 4 hours long. And
yeah.
But what it did show is there were some significant issues with executive functioning and visual, spatial. From there, they went through and proceeded to do, they thought it was early onset or Alzheimer's right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
Based on that, they sent me to have a spinal tap and a PET scan done.
Okay.
The PET scan showed profuse hypometabolism in the left, greater than the right, and in the occipital areas.
Okay.
That was not good.
Right.
So what it did say, okay, it's not me going crazy. There really is something going on here.
Mm-hmm. Did that relieve the stress for you a little bit? I mean, I know it's hard to get a diagnosis, but now it's not just in your mind. It's not just in John's mind.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now you have something that maybe you can attack.
Yes, and that was part one, is going, okay, there's definitely something medically that's not right. Now, is it something like an encephalopathy that can be treated with steroids or something else that maybe low vitamin D or something that could potentially be a cause? When you're younger, people, doctors and physicians tend to look at causes other than a potential neurodegenerative disease alongside with that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're thinking, okay, I was on short-term disability, and at that point, because I noticed there were things with my work that was happening too, I wasn't processing things in my mind as fast. It was taking me 3 and 4 times longer to do things that I could have whipped out in an hour.
Right.
My boss made a comment at one point, that only take 20 minutes on this, and it took me like an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So I was working much longer hours to try to handle what I was doing.
Can I ask you a question about that? So
yeah.
what were some of the first things that you noticed? I mean, did you look at, you know, some paperwork and say, how do I do this? Or something didn't look familiar to you? What was the process when it first started happening to you? What were you thinking? How did you notice it?
A couple different ways. Number one, I'd be in the same conversation with somebody else, listening the same thing, and I'd restate it back, and I would completely miss what the context of it should have actually been.
Wow. Okay.
It was like, no, I said, well, my understanding was, and like, no, Dad, that's not quite what we were saying. Or that I would, something new to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Or there would be releases and things within what I did. And, you know, we would have to train the clients on the new releases.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have to ask internally 3-4 times, okay, could you tell me again what that meant or what that new feature or that new code does?
Wow, right. And that's something I tell listeners all the time, that it's one of the first things that happens is you struggle to learn new information.
Mm-hmm. Jill, you nailed it. You nailed it, because that was when I look back now, I can see, oh, wow, it wasn't me being stressed. Or I would be in the middle of a client, literally on a client presentation, and the words wouldn't come out, and I would, everything, I just couldn't. And I would take a deep breath, and I would laugh it off, like, I haven't had enough coffee today. Let me take a step back and try it again.
Wow. And that's so demanding on you emotionally.
It really was, especially when you're someone who consistently excelled. Mm-hmm. And it was really hard to realize it. Ah, God, I must be getting older. I'm just not picking stuff up. Why am I not able to process this like I used to?
Mm-hmm. And so what did you think? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so when the PET scan came back, then it was like, oh, okay, there is something really going on. It's not just all stress.
Mm-hmm. Right. And was that... was it devastating when you and John received the diagnosis, or was it a relief, or somewhere in between?
It was both. It was a journey, because once after the PET scan, they did a lumbar puncture, and at that point, the results were indeterminate. Mm-hmm. And that's where I went from our local neurology institute to Mayo in Florida.
Okay.
And Mayo did some more advanced testing. And Mayo actually came up with a condition based on all of the different scans and testing that I had. And they had me go through another neuropsychological testing session, too.
Oh, fun.
Right? Oh, my goodness.
So,
long story short, it's one of the rarer forms. It hits people between 45 and 60.
Okay.
There's two components to it. What's interesting is that posterocortical atrophy component can also be a variant of Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's can be one underlying pathology of it.
Okay.
There's Lewy bodies can be another, and then what I have is cortical basal degeneration. So short, it's PCA / or - CBD.
Okay.
And it impacts the brain in the back going forward versus Alzheimer's. But the PCA component is actually a condition that usually has an underlying pathology like an Alzheimer's or a Lewy body or a cortical basal degeneration.
Okay. So working from the back of the brain, that controls your vision and your perception.
It does.
And
that's
right.
Exactly.
Contrast. It's so closely connected to the right side of your brain, which controls spatial, that they kind of gang up on you a little bit, right?
And you're absolutely right. That was one of the things that I unfortunately was blaringly a failure on in the neuropsychological testing was visuospatial. It significantly impacted in me.
Interesting. So does it change your vision?
Sometimes, Jill. I've had some crazy things. It's not all the time. Mm-hmm. I had some crazy things happen where I'm reading and the text turns red.
Wow.
Literally red. Or there was a scale in our bathroom. You know those Atria scales that you can hook up to a Fitbit?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I look and I'm like, I said, John, somebody dug a tunnel in our master bedroom closet.
Oh,
it looked like a tunnel, like a hole. I was like, oh, I can't duck there. You know, so
wow.
Sometimes the weird earth things may be a little wavy or like wavy lines or, you know, but it doesn't happen all the time. It's just, it sporadically just comes on like, whoa.
So when you thought when you thought you saw a hole, was the area black or was it black?
The scale is black.
Okay,
but
there you go.
The flooring, you know, is like a wood flooring.
Well, the reason why I ask you that is because, again, in the classes that I teach, I try to explain that when the back of the brain, the occipital lobe, is affected, contrast is an issue. And so people that have Alzheimer's or Alzheimer's-type symptoms will see something black as a whole often.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So that's why I asked you if it was black.
I'll be darned. It is. It is. The scale is black.
So you might even see a black tile or a black, you know, at some point in time, not every single day, but you might see a black rug or something and walk around it, even not even realizing you're doing it, thinking it might be something that if you step on it, it could be a hole.
How interesting.
Isn't that? So, yeah, the brain is an amazing, amazing tool. You said something when we first met, and I thought it was absolutely fascinating. you had gone to some speech therapy that you thought was really helpful for you.
Yes. Oh, goodness gracious. So, first of all, my husband and I were absolutely devastated. It turned our world upside down. All our entire life plan, whatever, just went away, and it was overwhelming. There are not a lot of resources for individuals with early onset neurodegenerative conditions.
Right.
And then you think about somebody that's like that. When you talked about stigma, Jill, mm-hmm. I was like, I'm only 54.
Right.
I mean, this is an older person's conditions, not somebody in midlife.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you don't hear about that. And then you start, your eyes open up, and you realize all these times when we as individuals are walking around our daily life and we see somebody mm-hmm. and that may be struggling, whether it's physically or cognitively or both, mm-hmm. I'm so much more aware of that. And to not have somebody look at me and as like...
And not see you?
Actually see me, who I am,
right.
Not what's happening to me,
right.
And that any one of us, it could hit any, there is nothing in my family. This is sporadic.
Isn't that interesting? So, yeah, I think you make an excellent point that I think the one thing that I realize after working with so many people with these various diagnoses is they say, please don't think because I've had a diagnosis that I went from being proficient in my life to deficient in my life.
Exactly.
You know, please see me as I am. I'm still here. So I tell people all the time, especially when if they come into a home to help you, sometimes family members can only see what you've lost, and I train caregivers to see what you can still do. Because it's so...
And that's...
Yeah, go ahead.
Brilliant.
It's what I feel my friends with diagnosis really need. They need you to please let them still do the things that you used to do. Let me be in the kitchen. Let me stir something. Let me stir the pot. You know what I mean? Don't write me off. I'm still here. Don't see what I've lost. See what I can still do. Let's work on this together. And I think we'd have a lot more happy people that have these kind of diagnoses if family members could only grasp that concept.
Family member, friends, I even tried so hard to go back to work. I loved what I did, and that was a part of me for many, many years. And to lose that is like losing a huge part of yourself. I was lost.
Yeah, I'm sure you were.
And when you get around to ask about this, the speech therapy, that was a saving grace in more than one way. And it was more. It's more than just speech therapy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the Neurological Institute locally immediately said, we're going to start you in cognitive speech therapy, even as I was going through Mayo to get that final diagnosis. So understanding the primary understanding, not brushing it off to the local neurologist, even though they couldn't quite figure out what it was, engaging a third party, mm-hmm. to immediately putting me into counseling and into therapy. It's more like a cognitive speech therapy. The therapist doesn't just work with how do you help yourself when you stutter.
Right.
But it was almost like treating the whole person. Ugh. The very first session I went to, Jill, she pulled out and said, we're going to talk about the five pillars of health.
Oh, I love that.
Right off the bat, hydration, sleep, nutrition, meditation, socialization, stimulating the brain.
Right.
We didn't even talk about speech. It was all about what are you doing? How do we make sure that you live the highest quality of life for as long as possible? And it was almost like a counseling session in the process because she's amazing. Maryland is absolutely amazing.
So
here
what,
in Florida.
What was most impactful for you? Which one of those five pillars? Or, you know, talk about each one of them if you'd like.
Well, And the funny thing is, Mayo actually has a card of 15 healthy brain tips, and all of them are wrapped in the five pillars. Nutrition, I always eat pretty decent, but I follow more of a Mediterranean diet now.
Okay.
Olive, nuts, fruits, vegetables. I limit dairy products. Chicken, I do chicken. Turkey, I limit red meat.
Okay.
Exercise. I'm not the greatest at that. I get on kicks, and Jill, you know this. I struggle with this, and I'm going to try the body group. I swear I am.
Well, I've got an idea for you on that. Tomorrow they have Funky Fridays where you just join on Zoom. And when we get off of this call today, I will send you a link and we can do it together.
So let's do that. That sounds great.
We'll get you dancing, girl. We'll get you feeling good.
I know. Get me moving. That, I got to do better at that. But exercise, aerobics, something that brings oxygen to your brain. The
right.
goal is like 30 minutes a day, just walk.
Right.
Hydration. I drink a ton of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
I keep water with me constantly. I drink water throughout the day. That's something, it took me about 6 weeks to change that habit of not drinking enough water. Now my body craves it. If I don't drink it, I'm like, I need water.
Well, living in Florida, I think you'd need a lot of water.
You would think, right? Exactly. But it was never, my big strong suit was just straight water, you know, but and I don't. I put a little bit of MIO in there, MIO. But it's just a teeny bit of flavor to it. I love it. But I'll drink it every. I'm constantly have my bottle of water with me or my Yeti of water. Sweet.
And how about the other area, socialization? I think the Body Groove Funky Fridays could help you with that. But just being around your friends, being around family, you know?
Socialization is huge, and it's one of the things that both the speech therapist, our local Ross Camp Institute, our local neurology institute, and Mayo all, quality sleep. We're still working on my sleep. I have intermittent sleep. I can sleep for like 3 or 4 hours, and then literally I'm up for 3 or 4 hours, not on electronics, but I cannot get back to sleep.
Oh, no. Okay.
And it's something we're still trying to find the right combination for that. I have to be really careful on meds that I take, because certain meds can really interfere with these type of conditions, whether it's all with Alzheimer's, with Lewy bodies, with frontal, with cortical basal, PCA. You have to be very, very careful on what you take.
Oh, I'm sure
I don't take,
you do. Go ahead.
Yeah. So
you don't
still working on trying to find the right, what to do with that.
Right. And what don't you take?
Sleep.
You said I don't take certain things. Maybe you don't take certain medications because they keep
you
from sleeping?
Like I there's a couple of Balsamra, which is really good for Alzheimer's patients. It's been approved for Alzheimer's. I personally just didn't do well with it.
Mm-hmm.
Seroquel, I think, was another one. I did not do well with it.
Right.
I am trying a new type of melatonin called Remfresh that my neurologist at Mayo recommended.
Okay.
And it's over the counter. You can order it on Amazon. Called Remfresh, comes in there, and it's supposed to help you stay asleep longer.
Nice. Well, one thing I want to suggest to you, a couple of things for getting enough activity and exercise during the day. You know, I really think if you can do those half hour body grooves, that they you can go as low or and slow and low intensity as you want. Or you can just dip a little bit deeper and work, you know, a little bit harder, and then you work up a little bit of a sweat, you know. That's the beautiful thing. But getting your cardio up for a half an hour is really helpful. I'd also like you to try, before you go to bed at night, to stretch a little bit. You know what I mean? Just go down to your feet, lean over, touch your, you know, try and spread your feet apart, you know, maybe just a little wider than shoulder length, and stretch a little bit. And do that just to kind of relax your mind. And then, you know, just kind of bring your hands up and breathe in and then exhale, and do those several times. And write notes about things that maybe you did during the day. That you enjoyed, things that you enjoyed during the day, things that you maybe want to do tomorrow, and write yourself a note, okay? And say, tomorrow I'm going to do this, tomorrow I'm going to do that, and, you know, I'm going to go to the grocery store, I'm going to, you know, do body groove for half an hour, whatever it is, you know what I mean? Going to take the dog for a walk, I'm going to go sit out on my back porch and read a book, whatever it is, and just write it down. And then that will help your psyche and your brain, your consciousness, subconsciousness, to process it. And then you can feel like, okay, I've got all that down. Now I can go to sleep. You might find that helpful.
I will. I'll definitely try that. I'll keep a notebook by my bed. It almost sounds like it's a way for my brain to kind of close the day.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so you're not laying in bed at night thinking about what you need to do tomorrow. Do you do that sometimes?
I never thought about it that way until now.
Yeah, because if you lay in your bed and you're kind of thinking, well, I need to do this, or, oh, I should have done this, or I'm just looking at the clock and why can't I sleep? And all of a sudden your brain starts talking yourself out of sleeping. Okay, so you can even use some little chanting things that could help you, like, I'm really relaxed. My bed is super comfortable. I feel really comfortable hearing John's breath, you know? I'm going to put an arm on him or something, and I'm going to just relax my brain, and everything feels good. The room feels wonderful. I've had a great day. I'm going to relax. Just real positive thoughts. You know,
I'm going to try that. I try not to do more deep breathing at night.
Mm-hmm.
Just to kind of relax. And I've got like a lavender pillow spray that I started to use.
Oh, nice, yeah.
So when I lay down, I'm breathing in that, to me, lavender is just very calming and very soothing.
Right. Yeah.
So
breathing is wonderful, Deb. I love that you do that. But if it starts to become more of an obstacle than helping you, like sometimes we get it in our brain where we say, I keep breathing. I'm breathing four times in and four times out. And then you roll over and you look at the clock, right? And then you say, well, this isn't working very well for me. And sometimes it can keep you awake more than helping you to calm down. You know what I mean? So we're going to take a really short break, and we'll be right back.
Living and working with Alzheimer's and other dementias can often be challenging. Summit Resilience Training provides education utilizing non-medical approaches for those who work with our friends affected by dementia. Believing families still need one-on-one assistance, we provide classes which help them understand the diseases affecting their loved ones, offering strategies and techniques for success with activities of daily living and working with confusing behaviors. We offer in-home assessments to clarify symptoms of dementia diseases and help families work together to find moments of joy while living with memory loss and impairment. Education programs instilling person-centered care philosophies are offered for professional caregivers working in communities and homes, which can be customized for their staff. Training is also available for first responders, such as law enforcement, fire, and EMT personnel. We are passionate that people with dementias, such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and others, are approached with compassion and understanding, and those who work with them have all the tools they need for success. Call us at Summit Resilience Training, 303-420-6988, to schedule a class or in-home assessment. Visit our website at summitresiliencetraining.com for more information.
Welcome back to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Okay, we're back today, and I have Deb Jobe on the phone with me and joining me on my podcast from Florida. Where do you live in Florida, Deb?
I live in Bradenton, Florida, which is south of St. Pete and a little north of Sarasota.
Oh, okay.
So right on the Gulf Coast.
Ooh, that's beautiful down there. I have been to Sanibel Island and Fort Myers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of in your neck of the woods there.
Yep, a little bit further south, but this was a dream of mine to move out here, actually for quite a while.
Wow. Where did you grow up?
I was born in Chicago, Illinois.
No wonder I like you. I'm an Illinois girl.
No way.
Yeah.
Really?
I'm from Decatur, 3 hours south.
Alfie Dard. Well, my husband's from Quincy, Illinois.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Yep. So, and then 10 years there, and my dad was transferred, and then I spent the remainder of time in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And then in 2014, my husband and I ended up relocating to Florida. Both our jobs, my company at that point when I was working kept trying to get me moved down to Florida where the corporate office was, and mm-hmm. timing was just not right. You know, the girls came first, 100,000%. They're amazing. Mm. And it just wasn't the right time, you know, throughout the years. But his boss called. I was actually in the office in Florida, in St. Pete, and my husband calls me and says, the gentleman that does my job, after 35 years, is retiring in St. Pete. He knows that your company's been trying to get you down. They're offering me the position.
Oh, that's awesome.
But I have to accept it within 24 hours.
Well, that's pretty crazy. And you were just ready to go, huh?
You know what? I called up my VP at the time, and I said, here's the deal. They had a relocation package within 24 hours ready.
Oh, wow.
And we had 90 days to move down.
Oh, my God.
And we hadn't even thought about selling the house in St. Louis at that point. It wasn't even on our mind.
Well,
but we love it here.
It's a good thing that the real estate market was pretty good in 2014, so you could just sell your house, right?
You're not kidding. We got it up on the market within 30 days, and we had two competing bids at the first open house. It was like it was fate. It was meant to be that we were to be down here.
Oh, that's awesome. So did you say you have kids?
I do.
Okay. And boys or girls, what do you have?
They are both amazing young ladies.
Beautiful.
My older daughter, Rachel, is 31 years old.
Mm-hmm.
She, when she finished college, she did her apprentice in the funeral directing. Her father owns a small funeral home in St. Louis, and she and her father run the business, and I'm so super proud of her.
Oh, love it.
And my other daughter just turned 30.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Heather. She is a... when she finished college, she had a dual major in Spanish and anthropology. She then went on for her anthropological master's. She right now is, I'm going to be a grandmother for the first time.
Congratulations.
To my grandson, Dante, who's on the way in 2 months. So she is actually kind of a little bit on hiatus right now. But she met her husband when she was studying abroad in Argentina.
Wow.
During college.
Wow.
So
he speaks Spanish. He's an Argentine.
That little boy will be duolingual.
Awesome.
That is for sure. And they are both amazing young ladies. And they're very supportive of what's happening.
I love that.
You know, we set up right now, we do weekly Skype calls or Zoom meetings, Zoom calls.
Mm-hmm.
They're constantly reaching out and saying, Mom, you know, what can I call me at any time of day or night? What do you need, John? What can we do to help? They, even though we are miles apart physically,
mm-hmm.
we actually talk more now.
I love
than
that.
We used to, because now we've made it to a point, we've made a point, John, kind of connected everyone together. My dad, who's just an amazing man, my brother, my sister-in-law, everyone said, mm-hmm. okay, here's what's going on. We talk more now than we ever did. And we were all very close, but everyone's lives get busy. Rachel?
Oh, man, I'll tell you what, that's so true. So what are some of your talents, your hobbies? What kind of things do you do?
Well, it's kind of hard right now because this PCA does tend to affect my vision and my balance, right?
Right, right.
I can't ride a bike anymore. I don't drive anymore.
Okay.
It's just not safe for me to drive,
mm-hmm.
Which is a bit frustrating for me.
Mm-hmm.
But what has happened is I love to read. I always have. So when I can't see the book as well,
mm-hmm.
I have I actually signed up to our local library as well.
Okay.
And I have been downloading audiobooks. I also use Audible, but there's a pretty good large selection in our libraries that people don't. I did not realize that, but there are so many Audible books available for download.
Absolutely, and they're free.
It's free, and that's what it was. So I listen to audiobooks a lot if I can't, if I'm not doing well that day with vision-wise.
Mm-hmm.
But something that has come out of this, which I don't know if anyone else has experienced, because most of what's happening from the degeneration, it's left greater than right. I had no artistic ability whatsoever, Jill. Nothing. I couldn't even draw a stick figure. I'm finding myself. John got me my first adult coloring book. Got me a nice set of color pencils, and I started doing that. And then all of a sudden, I'm starting to do shading and layerings and things. Now I'm starting to actually freehand and free sketch. I'm working on a rose right now. An artistic side of me has come out that has never been there.
That's amazing.
Ever.
That is amazing, because you'd think it would be exactly the opposite. But there you go. That's what I said. We have to see what you can still do, not what you've lost. And sometimes things that you never thought you could do, you know, you can do now.
Well, my Dr. Dreadlet Nail was like, because your left side of your brain is what's kind of dying first, mm-hmm. your right side is opening up and compensating more, and all of a sudden those type of skills are controlled on the right side of your brain.
That's amazing. And, you know, the left side of your brain is controlling your attention span, you know, your ability to focus, being mm-hmm. able to recognize objects and things of that nature. And so when you struggle with that, just call it as it is, right? Like, okay, mm-hmm. I'm looking at this. It's a rose. I can't comprehend right now for a second that it's a rose, but just keep pushing through it. Don't let those kind of things get to you, because that's something
I do.
Yeah.
And so you gave me the greatest piece of advice, because I struggle sometimes with saying, you know, I'll be like, you know, John, that thing downstairs, you know, that thing that looks like this, because the mm-hmm. word, the name of it doesn't come to me.
Right.
And he used to tell me right away what it was. And then you said, Jill, you need to tell him, give me some time for my brain to process this, for me to come up with that. And I did. I said, okay, John, I need you to just, before you jump in and tell me what it is or finish my sentence, I just need a few minutes to be able to. And he's like, you never told me that.
Right.
I'm like, I know. And that was my fault for not telling you that.
Well, I'm glad that worked for you, because I really do believe, you know, sometimes it's helpful for them to try to fill in the blanks for you. But in your particular case, you're really sharp, you know, and you're really trying. And I can see when we're on Zoom calls and things like that, I can see your face and you're trying to process it. Just give me a second, darn it, you know.
I just need that little extra time. And he's like, well, you should have told me. I thought I was helping you.
Well, and don't either one of you kick yourself for not knowing that. Sometimes it takes somebody like an outsider like me to say, hey, have you ever thought about that? You know what I mean? Just say, this is what I need. Give me a minute. Give me a full minute. If I forget the thought, then I'll kind of shrug my hands and say, all right, it's gone. But give me a chance.
And I've done that.
Yeah,
I've done that, Jill, to the point where I'm like, okay, I can't, okay, I don't know what it is, tell me.
Right.
And one of the things that he came up with that has worked so well, I just told a friend of mine, I talked to her, Kelly, she's young like me, and she's facing early onset Alzheimer's. And I think what I want people to understand is, we know this sucks, it's devastating, but early intervention is so huge, speech therapy. I'm going to go through occupational physical therapy. Mm-hmm. That will help me with the visuospatial issues, because I'm running into walls or I may pour something and it doesn't quite hit the glass.
Right.
But my neurologist said they'll give you strategies to compensate for that. So teaching you how to walk you know, what to do to walk in the middle of the doorway versus bumping into it, or when you're pouring something, what you can use to make sure you hit it in the glass.
Nice.
And I never thought about those, but those are those early intervention strategies. That's going to keep your quality of life up, mm-hmm. as best, you know, keep you as independent and as long as, along with, like, you know, things like the brain stuff, like word games and puzzles and art therapy and learn something new. It's a struggle to learn something new, but it all helps your brain. But my friend Kelly is in the same mindset, and we happened to talk today before this, and I was telling her about these cards that John does for me now.
Mm-hmm.
So every time, if there's something that I need to remember to look at on a daily basis, and of course my memory is not the best, my short term, long term, I'm great.
Mm-hmm.
Short term, it sucks. We
right.
will find a picture of it online. We'll put the words like refill water,
mm-hmm.
and then put a picture of the water bottle. And then every time there's something new that I have to remember, the dishes are clean.
Right.
Once we make those up, he goes and gets them laminated.
Nice.
And then in the appropriate places, he puts these cards. So it helps. So, because he's not home during the day right now. And it helps mm-hmm. me to say, that's right, I got to take, you know, the dogs, are they okay? The laundry's. He put a load in the washer and move it to the dryer. So every time we come across, we go through and we make these cards
mm-hmm.
with the picture, because sometimes the picture works for me and sometimes the words do.
Right.
So it all depends on what that day, and every day is a little bit different for me.
Let me ask you a question. Have you been mm-hmm. Are you in a support group at all?
Yes. So, that's another really key thing that both Roskamp and Mayo, Roskamp immediately referred us to the Alzheimer's Association.
Mm-hmm.
And I called them, and I am at an Alzheimer's early onset mm-hmm. or younger onset Alzheimer's. And what people tend to think is that Alzheimer's is just for Alzheimer's. No, Alzheimer's is there for support for all types of neurodegenerative conditions, whether it's frontal temporal, whether it's Parkinson's, whether mm-hmm. it's Lewy bodies, whether it's Alzheimer's, or whether it's PCA with cortical basal degeneration, any form of dementia, they have support and tools and resources for that. That was a godsend. I met many wonderful people through there. I have gone to the Florida legislature in the State House of Florida, and I have spoken with senators and representatives. I was supposed to be in D.C., but that got canceled because of COVID.
Right.
But it brings, when you get support, too, there's so many local resources that you're not aware of. They had an art therapy group, which is what actually got me. All of a sudden, I was like, I can't believe I'm doing this. I never would have thought about it. But it was art, you know, it was art in motion, art for memories.
Right.
So many different, and they gave us a list of elder care lawyers and you know, individuals to contact. Because you don't think about having to get your estate in order or advanced directives. You're not thinking about that in your 50s, early
right.
50s.
Right. You know, it's interesting that you said that, because when I worked for the Alzheimer's Association, I worked for them for nearly 2 decades, and one of my jobs was the early stage group, working with the early stage group.
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Oh, I know.
Well,
and so, you know, it was one of my favorite things to do. Every Tuesday, we'd have a group come in, and mm-hmm. I'd have them for 2 hours, and I called my group Taking Charge. So,
we could
get, you know, you could say what you needed to say, but we would have times when we would do poetry reading, or we'd go down to the art museum, or we would just journal, or whatever we needed to do, play cards, everybody playing cards, or, you know, just talking about what was going on. But it wasn't always just kind of to be, you know, like a support group bitch session or something like that. I wanted
right.
to make sure everybody was really feeling positive and could get out what they needed to say, and if they couldn't communicate it well to their family members, I would try to bridge that gap. So my partner and I, Sharon, she had the group, the support group for the family members, and each week we would trade. So that way we could have a chance to talk to the family members and relay what we needed to relay. And then the other week I'd be back with the early stage group. And you said something that is so true. I've tried to say many times on my show. People think that Alzheimer's or any variants of Alzheimer's are old people's diseases. I know because I'm in a group for the dominantly inherited Alzheimer's that people get it in their 20s. There are actually babies born with Alzheimer's. It's not uncommon for somebody to be in their 20s, their 30s, their 40s, their 50s, and we're better at diagnosing these things today. And so that's something I wish people would just let go of, that they think it's older people. Not the case.
And that's one of my goals now. I never gave any thought to it. Mm-hmm. I'm not kidding you, Jill. And many people, my friends and family around me, we never gave a thought to it.
Right.
But it is so much more prevalent than people think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And you can have the familial connection.
Right,
and
I do.
Or some of these things just hit sporadically. There's no rhyme or reason. It just hits.
Mm-hmm.
And to know, and the biggest, the only thing I can say is early intervention in doing those things right up front. Like Kelly, my friend Kelly and I were both like, okay, we're going to tackle this and we're going to tackle it head on. And you know what? I'm not going to be afraid to tell people, and I'm not going to be afraid to say, and to try new things, whatever I need to keep what I can for as long as I can, and also to help educate people. Therapies, like the speech therapy, it's more than speech therapy.
Right.
It helps. It teaches you so many. There's a visual associations, memory techniques to learn. She's the one that told me about, Marilyn was the one that told me about, well, go find your, when I was able to drive, I could never find my car. There's a Find Your Car app you could download. You know, the garage
That's
door.
Awesome.
I swear the garage door was closed, and it wasn't. But to me, my visual, it looked closed. Well, she goes, there's an app for that.
Right.
So she would bring these Alexa. I use Alexa like crazy. Alexa, remind me to change the laundry, or Alexa, remind me to check the, I don't really cook so much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mix my tablespoons and my teaspoons up a lot now. But I can still turn it. I can still turn an oven on and put something in there. Alexa, remind me to check the oven in 10 minutes.
You know, who would have thought that when this was created, it was really just to be a shortcut for people? But what a gift, right? What
it isn't. A tool.
Yeah.
Alexa reminds me to take the medications I need. Alexa reminds me every day, Deb, take your brain pill. Deb, take this.
Right.
Because I forget. I forget to take my medications. I forget to eat.
Oh, I'm sure you do. Yeah.
Alexa, she'll say, Deb, have you had lunch?
Oh, I love that. So do you have to put those reminders in, ask me if I've had lunch and things like that? Does John help you with that?
So there are a couple ways to do it. There are blueprints that you can create on Alexa. You go on the Alexa app itself, and you can actually create a blueprint. Or even if it, but I can just say that morning, Alexa, remind me at noon to eat lunch. And she will.
Wow, that's awesome.
If John wants me to remember something during the day, he'll say, Alexa, remind Deb to change the laundry over at 11 a.m.
Awesome. That's awesome. You know, I just had a really amazing thought. You're talking about apps. I'm building a care partner app, a caregiver app. Okay, that I'm trying to create it and have it be animated so that it's not just your run-of-the-mill, you're trying to learn about how to be a caregiver from somebody on a video that is not really real, actors acting like it and so on and so forth. I think I need to set up a call with you and your friend Kelly so you can help me to put the right things in there. You know what I mean? So that I could get some feedback from you on what you need people to know. Would you be willing to do that?
Absolutely, because John and I are learning together.
Right.
This was something that he never dealt with. It was his idea with those parts that could come up with. Every situation we have to tackle together, and he gets frustrated with me. There's no doubt. But he's learning, too. We're both learning how to deal with different things as they come along. But instead of looking at it as I'm declining or I'm starting to progress, it's like, okay, what can we put in place now? What's next? What do we do next to help keep you in independent? And COVID
that.
Has been rough, like anybody. Many of us feel very isolated. I don't drive. I'm by myself during the day. But the Alzheimer's Association has all sorts of cool things. They have online or even phone call support groups. They have, they're not iPads, but similar to iPads that they're giving out
to
individuals. So they can connect with their families.
Oh, that's beautiful.
If you need it, you just contact, in Florida specifically, Florida has a program. So if anybody's in Florida, if you don't have a way to communicate with your family, you just call up the helpline, and they are delivering and sending out pre-programmed, similar to an iPad, but not an iPad, where your family and you can connect.
Oh, my God, that's beautiful.
That kind of stuff. It keeps us isolated, but there are things out there that can help us.
I want to ask you a question, and this is kind of personal, so you don't, you tell me if you want to answer or not. But you are, from an aesthetic situation, a very beautiful lady. Absolutely beautiful.
Thank you.
I haven't seen your husband. But how has that changed for you with your husband? Has this brought you closer? You know what I mean? How do you keep up your physical appearance? Is absolutely gorgeous. You're drop dead beautiful.
My God.
I know. So I just want to tell you that. So how has that played a role? You know what I mean? Still doing the things you want to do every day that make you feel beautiful, that make you feel sexy, that make it romantic with your husband.
My husband is an amazing man. We met at Match.com. I credit my dad. My dad, when I was married for 9 years, I was divorced for 9 before I met John. He made me go on this because he was worried about me because I was working and taking care of the girls. And the girls have a great father. But I met him on Match.com. We've been married 15 years this past April.
Awesome.
Amazing man. But it doesn't matter what I look like. He looks at me. He says, Deb, you're beautiful with makeup, without makeup, whatever. But he knows a few things that are still important to me is like every once in a while, I just get my nails done, get my hair done. You know, it's like he knows that kind of stuff is still important to me. And so he doesn't, even though maybe I may not be remembering a lot of things or I may not be as sharp as I was, he knows me, and he knows massages. He'll set up massages for us.
Awesome.
Or you know, he'll take me to my hair appointment to get my hair, you know, to color the gray that I have. And, okay, yeah, I totally color the gray. sometimes he'll take me up to the and sit with me at literally and go get his toes done so I can get a pedicure.
Oh, that's awesome.
And he'll sit there with me and get it done. So he's learning how to gauge what's happening to me on a day by day basis. Some days he's very quiet because he knows that I need more quiet, and he puts on soothing background music.
Mm-hmm.
He'll turn the lights down. He'll light candles.
Oh, he's heavenly.
Just because he knows. That's as he knows. When I'm super anxious, and trust me, we all get, there's times when we get really, really anxious. When you have, you know, something, anyone who deals with a neurogen knows that there's anxiety periods where you're just like, oh my God, oh my God. And he has learned to read me better than I read myself.
That's awesome. He sounds like an amazing guy.
He is. But the one thing we're both learning is that both of us need to communicate more with each other, meaning that, like me not telling him, give me a chance to finish my sentences or to think what that word is, and him wanting to step in. So we're trying to take your advice and kind of take more of a step back and say, okay, what do I do? And he's reading a lot of materials, and he calls himself a care partner. Not a giver, right. But a care partner.
Right.
He's like, how do I, you know, I don't want to take things away from her. Mm-hmm. But now we have had very frank discussions on finances. I should take care of all the finances. I know I can't anymore. I've made mistakes, or I forget to pay something, or I made the check out, or I sent too much money.
Right.
So we came to the agreement together that he's taking over the finances, but I will still have my own little account that has X dollar money in it. So, but if I mess up on something, it's not going to be detrimental.
Right. Excellent.
You just have to, and it took, trust me, we've had our argument. I accused him one time of shutting me out of everything. And it took, but he had to have the patience. It took a lot of patience and a lot of frustration on his part. Say, I'm not shutting out, I'm protecting us.
Right, exactly. You've been so open and so wonderful today, and I'm sure that the listeners are going to enjoy this podcast because you just have a really open and beautiful sense of the way you explain this. And I just can't thank you enough for sitting and talking with me today, and I can't wait till we can body groove together.
Well, thank you for letting me share and for people to know that it doesn't matter what age you are. It's not a stigma. Don't let people ever put you in a corner.
Right.
You can embrace it and you can do everything possible and you can do early intervention to change it. Now, you can't change the diagnosis, but you can change your quality of life.
That's exactly right, and very well said. That's what resilience is, overcoming obstacles and adversity to find a positive outcome. Right?
I love it, and that's exactly right. Positivity.
That's right. That's how I thoroughly believe we can find moments of joy, and we should always look for them. Deb, you have been awesome, and I look forward to talking to you again and getting to know you better. And when I get off this call today, I'm going to send you an email on how we can do that Funky Friday together.
All right, I'm with you. I'll be there tomorrow.
I promise. All right, girl. I'll do it. Thank you so much for being on the show today. God bless you, and tell John that I think he's awesome. Okay.
Thank you. And Jill, thank you for what you do. I went to your site and it's amazing. Truly. Thank you.
Bless your heart, girl. Well, I'll talk to you again someday. But for right now, thank you, listeners. And we'll see you next week on Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
You've been listening to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz. To learn more about her resources, services, classes, or to book speaking engagements, visit Jill's website at summitresiliencetraining.com. A new podcast drops every Tuesday, so join us as we learn more about dementias, resilience, and overcoming obstacles to find a positive outcome. Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz can be found on your favorite podcast provider. Please subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. Musical and technical support provided by Brian Hunter. See you next week.